A moment no one in Toronto will forget. A sense of safety and security shattered for so many. An attack in the heart of our community on a sunny afternoon in 2018.
These are the lives lost that day. The victims of an act of hate. All they were doing was walking down Yonge Street. Their loved ones and an entire city forever changed by the tragedy. Good evening. Tonight, the man responsible for the carnage has been sentenced. Life in prison with no chance of parole for 25 years.
The judge emphasizing the devastating impact of his actions. This has been a day of intense emotion and a warning about the upsetting details in this story. CTV's Scott Lightfoot is live outside the University Avenue courthouse with more. Scott.
Michelle, a very, very emotional day here in court. You know, the family and friends of the deceased, as well as those who survived the attack and those who were first on scene, they've been waiting more than 4 years for this day to happen. I can tell you that crying and sobbing could be heard throughout the day as the stories of the names we have learned of the victims, their stories were told in court. Even the judge got emotional at points of the day. The sentence here was no surprise, but the judge was crystal clear when she delivered it. She said, this is a life sentence, which means exactly that. It is a sentence for the rest of this man's natural life.
It was a long and emotional day as court and the man convicted in one of the worst mass killings in this country's history heard dozens of victim impact statements from parents and siblings, spouses and friends of those who died on April 23rd, 2018.
They say that you need closure in life. I mean, I'm still never going to get that, but there was this huge weight that was lifted from my shoulders in saying that. I mean, he's in there today. It's very difficult to be saying those words in front of him, but it was necessary.
Court heard about the lives behind the names forever attached to this tragedy and the grief and pain experienced by their family members. Then there are those who survived the attack and showed up today to speak to their attacker.
I took my opportunity to speak to him because I didn't get that chance during the trial because it was on Zoom. So we had a face-to-face and I said at the very beginning, it's what I wanted to do and I'm saying my piece.
4 years later and the emotional toll of this tragedy is still very raw, especially for those who witnessed the attack and did what they could to assist others.
After 4 years, still is very difficult for people that were involved and directly or indirectly. And I hope that we all could one day just, move on, but never forget.
Many spoke of the challenges of finding the right words to say to a man who killed 11, injured 15, tore apart countless lives, and has shown little to no remorse since. Through sobs of grief, the father of Anne-Marie D'Amico said, I'm among 26 families who are living in a constant hell, all because women would not respond to the advances of a killer. As we live in pain, his family will carry that shame. Adding later, all that carnage for a place in history. Anne-Marie's mother looked directly at her daughter's killer as she said, you said you felt like you were lonely and isolated. Now you are lonely and isolated. And some chose not to use words at all. The son of Renuka Amarsingha, who was just 5 at the time his mother was killed, put crayons to paper for his victim impact statement, a drawing of he and his mother with the sun shining down. In the end, the sentence handed down was no surprise. Life behind bars with no chance of parole for 25 years. Today's sentencing long delayed, waiting for a Supreme Court decision that limited the judge's ability to extend parole eligibility. All sentences must be served concurrently instead of consecutively.
It by no means conflates parole ineligibility with a reduction in sentence. It's still a life sentence. And so I want to be very clear, and I think it's important for the families and everybody else to understand, this person will serve a life sentence, and there is little to no chance that he will ever get parole.
Justice Anne Malloy told the courtroom, the sentence I am imposing today for these murders is a life sentence, which means just that, a sentence for the rest of this man's natural life.
I can tell you this court proceeding was expected to take several days. It ended up all being done today. The sentencing came very late in the day, and we are getting reaction from some of the family members of some of the victims, including Munir Najjar's family. He's an 85-year-old. He was 85-year-old when he was killed. He was visiting Toronto to visit his family. His son Omar spoke today. He said he holds no hate in his heart, only sadness. And this is what he said just moments after the sentence came down.
At the end of the day, we have to respect the law of the land. Obviously, we all wanted him to not be eligible for parole for much, much longer. But it is what it is. This is what the Supreme Court ordered. I'm happy that we have him behind bars. I have to say, everybody involved in the process, be it the Crown, the judge, the police, the victim witness services, first responders, did an amazing job. It's the one thing that could restore our faith in humanity.
This awful crime, the trial heard, was done partially out of a desire for infamy. But when the man convicted was given the chance to speak, given the chance to apologize for his actions or offer some compassion to the countless lives he has forever touched, he chose not to do so. He will be eligible for parole in 21 years, considering time served. But as the judge suggested today, even if he does choose to do so in 21 years, it's very unlikely he will get parole. Reporting live outside 361 University, I'm Scott Lightfoot. Nathan, back to you.
All right, thank you, Scott. And our online team is tracking the latest with this story. You can find their coverage at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
We turn to increasing costs, growing debt, and financial fears.
Some homeowners across Canada are reevaluating their living situation. It comes as rising interest rates have many questioning just how much debt they can take on. CTV's Bill Fortier reports.
With the cost of a mortgage on the rise, interest rates are on the minds of many homeowners.
It really does concern me, especially because everything is going up, not just mortgages.
Nobody wants to pay more for interest. Nobody will be happy about it.
A recent debt survey from Manulife shows 1 in 5 believe they can no longer afford their existing mortgage. And a quarter of Canadians say if interest rates increase further, they will have to sell their home.
It does show that, you know, there is definitely some sensitivity out there.
And a further increase is likely. The Bank of Canada signaling the move may be necessary to slow the out-of-control inflation rate.
And that is really spooky markets, and that's what's causing the massive volatility that we're seeing today.
But analysts warn raising interest too aggressively could result in Canadians spending less money, hurting Canada's economy.
If that happens, then obviously there's going to be a decision to be made. How much of this impact can we take moving forward of higher borrowing costs? And that's the balance they're going to have to strike.
I do think that what you have to watch for carefully is, are we seeing weaknesses across all regions in Canada? So not just Vancouver and not just Ontario.
Financial planners expect many Canadians will have some tough decisions in the coming months just to keep their homes.
Inflation is at an all-time high, and how can people afford to shop at Walmart even where we're standing right now?
The survey also found about 3/4 of Canadians don't have a household plan, and it revealed some confusion. Nearly a third of respondents admitting they don't really understand inflation or interest rates. Bill Fortier, CTV News, Edmonton.
And so many of those concerns hit close to home for those here in the GTA.
With the cost of living so high, every penny counts for so many families. CTV's Rahim Ladani is live with more on that. Rahim.
Well, Michelle and Nathan, you really don't have to go far to see how the affordability crisis is affecting people. Here in Scarborough, we spoke with several individuals whose living situation is being impacted in different ways.
While Ron Ursuan works on his car, there's another expense weighing on his mind.
We can barely afford our mortgage as it is right now, and then with the interest rates going up our renewal, I'm afraid that we might not be able to afford it at all.
Toronto's housing market is becoming less affordable for both prospective and current homeowners. And Ursua says his family's having to make sacrifices.
Summertime now, and the little one's going to be off of school soon. Our vacations are taking a hit this year, for sure.
After inflation hit a 31-year high last month, the Bank of Canada is expected to raise interest rates again in July. It's that type of outlook which experts fear could trigger a housing crash last seen in the 1990s.
We saw individuals just dropping off their keys at their bank because they could no longer afford their mortgage payment. And if we're heading for that situation, then this could be catastrophic for many people.
Michael Dalton is one of those people. He just went through a similar circumstance.
I recently did have to sell my house, and what I sold it for and what it's gone up to is it's not comparable.
He acknowledges inflation needs to be curbed, but thinks the government should look at other ways to solve the problem.
Look at the last Lotto Max. How much money did they make on that, all right? So they say that's invested back into Canada and Ontario. Well, maybe taxpayers should see that.
As people's buying power decreases, the Toronto Regional Real Estate Board predicts the rental market is going to get more competitive within the GTA. That has those like John Notario concerned that certain communities will once again be priced out.
Especially for the newcomers, it's getting harder and harder.
Even if you have the full-time jobs, both of you, everything gets expensive.
And there are few signs of long-term relief. Now, to give you a better sense of where the current rental market stands, according to rentals.ca, the average rent in Toronto this year is $2,365, and in Richmond Hill, it's more than $2,600. Reporting live, I'm Raheem Ladani. Nathan, back to you.
All right, thank you, Raheem. Let's take a look outside. It's still spring, but it's going to feel a lot more like summer as the week goes on. Get ready for heat and humidity here in southern Ontario. Jessica Smith's here with a look at the current conditions. Jessica.
It starts really today, this warming trend. A ridge is going to build into our forecast, really covering all of southern Ontario, and temperatures are on the rise. Generally clear skies. We're watching a few more clouds start to kind of roll in, and a little bit of active weather on the way for Windsor, but Toronto and the GTA staying clear for the most part this evening. Around the Golden Horseshoe, those humidex values are getting pretty warm, feeling closer to the mid-20s, and by the middle and end of the week, it gets well above that. Through the islands and over towards Pearson, we're sitting at about 20 degrees, but it feels much warmer than that. Tonight, dropping down to 15. Now, there is the slight chance of a shower as a system makes its way through kind of in that extreme southwestern corner. But really, that clears up and getting into the day tomorrow. The heat is on as the song goes, and it only gets warmer as we head further into the week. We'll have those details coming up. Michelle.
Thank you, Jess. We turn to breaking news near Lindsay and a horrific end to the search for a young boy.
An 11-year-old with autism who'd been missing for more than 24 hours. In just the last few minutes, police say his body's been found. CTV's Beth McDonnell is live with more. Beth.
Nathan, this is not the outcome anyone wanted. I'm still here at the scene with friends, family, and neighbors who helped in this search. And this was a very exhaustive search. We had multiple police forces looking for this boy from the air, from the sky. People said he was outgoing, fun, and this community is devastated.
Oh, he's fun. Lots of energy. He, like, you know, go, go, go. Likes to joke. Likes his tablets.
Speaking just hours before his son was found, Dad Justin Graham says his son had gone missing before, but not for such a long time. Draven Graham was just 11 years old and lived with autism.
Great kid, friendly. He's high-functioning autism.
The Kawartha Lakes Police Service says Draven's body was recovered by the underwater search and rescue team. He disappeared around 3 o'clock Sunday afternoon. Since then, an extensive search had been underway with several police forces springing into action from the sky, in the water, and on the ground. Many stepping into search from near and far.
My work's like 45 minutes away. I'll go straight here from work. I'll look all day if I have to. I'm just going to keep searching.
We were out till 2:30 this morning, scoping every inch of this east end that we could.
Pretty heart-wrenching. Worried about the little guy, worrying about his family.
Police say Draven had been last spotted on video surveillance about 30 minutes after he left home, and his clothes were found nearby. As time passed, neighbors, friends, and family kept looking for Draven.
I live here, and I've never heard of this kind of missing ever here in Lindsay. It hits home with me.
Scouring the community in the hopes of bringing him home safe.
There's a lot of sadness here tonight. Police are starting to clear away their command center, and people in the community are hoping to bring flowers over to this spot near the water where Draven was found. Reporting live in Lindsay, I'm Beth McDonnell. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Beth. Forced to say goodbye over the phone. The tragic ripple effect of a canceled flight.
A family sharing their grief about their travel nightmare. CTV's Sean Lethong is live at Pearson Airport with more. Sean.
Well, Nathan, Michelle, we've been hearing a lot of stories about those travel nightmares as the need to travel has really ramped up. People wanting to go on vacation, but all through the pandemic, many people had to travel to see loved ones, trying to say goodbye. And this woman, unfortunately, was caught in the current situation trying to do what she had to.
Having heard how difficult flying through Toronto can be, Allison White didn't want to go to Pearson Airport, but she had to.
We got a call that my dad would be passing and that we should get flights home immediately.
It was last Thursday. White, who lives in Calgary along with her brother, was told that her 73-year-old father, Paul, had suffered a cardiac arrest and they would have to fly from Calgary to Toronto, connecting to their hometown of Sydney, Nova Scotia.
About an hour left to our flight landing in Toronto, I got an email that said our flight had been canceled.
White says she and her brother Randy tried to explain the urgency of their situation to Air Canada staff. Phone calls to Air Canada going unanswered, speaking to managers on the ground.
No compassion, like, whatsoever.
With no flight booked, Air Canada offered a $40 voucher for food, no hotel. White and her brother were stuck inside Pearson waiting in a customer service line.
As it was becoming, like, more evident that we weren't going to make it home in time, to say goodbye to him while he could still, like, understand, my brother held the phone up to my dad's ear so that I could say bye to him. And while I stood in line at the customer service for Air Canada, it was humiliating.
After the humiliation of saying a final goodbye to her parent while standing inside an airport, they still had to get home. Though he would lose consciousness, her father was on life support.
There were business class seats that were available on the flight first thing in the morning to Sydney, and they would not give them to us. I offered to buy them, and it would have came to $8,000.
White could not afford the tickets. A family member, who is an Air Canada Elite traveler, was able to book White and her brother a flight to Halifax, leaving them with a five-hour drive home to Sydney.
We went straight to the hospital and had about, like, an hour with my dad before we took him off of life support. So it was like really awful.
In a statement, Air Canada said that White's connecting flight was canceled for constraints and the delays at Toronto Pearson. Affected passengers were rebooked to travel over the next 2 days. And we regret we are unable to compensate for matters outside the airline's control. Allison White says that the ordeal has left them feeling as though there is no compensation that would be appropriate.
There was no help, no empathy, no dignity whatsoever in flying with them, and never again, under no circumstances, will I ever fly with Air Canada again.
And above all, Allison White said that when she first found out that her connecting flight had been canceled, she assumed that somebody would help, they would hear her story, and that there would be that empathy. And she was stunned to find out, to say what she says, there was none here. Reporting live, I'm Sean Leithong. Nathan, I'll send it back to you.
All right, thank you, Sean. Next is some scary moments for students, staff, and families connected to a school in Brampton.
A man reportedly seen with a weapon in the area, prompting a fast and substantial response. CTV's John Musselman is live near Jean Augustine Secondary School with more on what happened. John.
Well, Michelle, no weapon was found, including no man in this neighborhood. But still, you're right. There's a lot of anxious moments for students and parents here. Students at Jean Augustine Secondary School in Northwest Brampton say the lockdown order was issued around noon after police received reports about a suspect shooting at a wall, possibly near the sports field. In this video from the CTV News helicopter, you can see students sitting up against the wall near the school garbage bins. Inside the school, the doors were quickly locked.
And then what did the school announce?
There's a lockdown.
Okay, how long were you in lockdown?
For like an hour and a half, maybe.
We were just in math class, and then my teacher, she like rushed everyone to the closet, like this storage room. And we were all just sitting there.
I'm kind of shocked because of, you know, which area we live in, and this typically has never happened here before. And the stuff that's been happening recently with the threats going on online about coming to shoot up the school and stuff like that, and now someone shooting at the school or shooting in the area, it's kind of scary.
Nearly a dozen Peel Regional Police cars surrounded the school. Officers also searched some of the streets in the neighborhood. Anxious parents arrived at the school when they received text messages from their kids.
And we just talked to one of the officers, and she said, yeah, everything is fine.
Yeah, yeah.
And they didn't tell what's happening, but they said, everything is okay.
Peel Regional Police say there was no evidence of a shooting in the area. No one was injured, and no one is in custody. Many of the students headed home when the lockdown was lifted around 2 o'clock this afternoon. And everything was back to normal around 2:30 this afternoon in this area. Peel Police are having some officers here still in the area, making sure everything is okay. Reporting live, I'm John Musselman. I'll send it back to you.
Thank you, John. There is more frustration tonight for residents of a community housing building.
New relocation orders at the complex after part of a ceiling came crashing down, injuring at least one tenant. CTV's Janice Golding reports.
So we are at my living room,
And then the Toronto Community Housing construction worker came without my permission.
When Helena Chandre returned from school drop-off Friday morning, she found her home full of Toronto Community Housing workers.
They moved the furniture, they changed the layout, and they put the structural support.
On May 27th, her neighbor two doors down was seriously injured when a portion of her concrete ceiling collapsed.
I'm not feel safe at all. I'm really afraid every night. I'm praying and crying.
And now Toronto's chief building official has issued an emergency order to the Toronto Community Housing Corporation, concluding that the 154 TCHC townhouse units in the complex at Swansea Mews are currently uninhabitable and therefore unsafe for occupancy.
It collapsed over the toilet.
Swansea Mews resident Andrea McInnes, who says her own ceiling came down in April, says she's not surprised.
It was a situation going on for over 5 years till it finally collapsed. I reported it multiple times. They ignored it. They dropped the ball. A big wrecking ball.
Following the recent collapse, some tenants in Block H were relocated to post-secondary school campuses. Since then, an independent engineering inspection has found 3 out of 14, or 21%, of concrete panels subjected to destructive testing were defective, an issue the TCHC says dates back to the original construction.
There are significant maintenance issues there, but this is different. This is a ceiling failure of a panel that should never fail in this manner. This is not maintenance. This is a failure that has never been seen before.
And yesterday, the city's chief building official ordered the TCHC to have a structural engineer submit a plan to remedy these conditions by week's end. The city even sent shelter buses to the complex late last night.
Do you have a list where we're going to be? They said, no, we don't have no idea. Then I said, why are you knocking my door? Don't knock my door if you don't have the answer.
The TCHC says it has signed agreements with Humber College, George Brown, and Toronto Metropolitan University, and is also in talks with York University.
That's the reason I'm still here, because I just don't feel it is a proper place for me to go with my family.
Many Swansea tenants have decided to remain in their homes because the alternative is even worse.
The TCHC admits the short-term choices aren't ideal.
Would I prefer to stay in a dorm room? No. But when I look at the safety risk that's upon our tenants, then that is absolutely a better option.
I'm really afraid of my life and my children's safety.
Meanwhile, Helena Chandre says she just wants more clarity.
It's very scary because I feel like, you know, I don't have a permanent place to stay.
Like many of the residents here, Chandre says she's getting very little information or reassurance. The TCHC, meanwhile, says it will be holding a town hall meeting tomorrow evening to answer residents' questions. Janice Golding, CTV News.
For a second time, Prime Minister Trudeau has tested positive for COVID-19. Trudeau making the announcement on Twitter saying, I'll be following public health guidelines and isolating. I feel okay, but that's because I got my shots. So if you haven't, get vaccinated. And if you can, get boosted. Let's protect our healthcare system, each other, and ourselves. Trudeau also had COVID in January after his children tested positive for the virus.
Meanwhile, the end is near for Canada's COVID Alert app. A government source tells the Canadian Press the app will be dropped in the coming days. It was billed as a way to alert people if they've been in close contact with someone who is infected. But the app has been criticized for being ineffective and not living up to expectations. The application cost $20 million to roll out, most of that going to promotion and advertising. Holding on to the big lie, that's what Donald Trump's closest campaign advisors say the former U.S. president was doing ahead of January 6, 2021.
Former U.S. Attorney General William Barr says he told Trump claims of rampant voter fraud were not true, but says the president refused to accept the results.
I was somewhat demoralized because I thought, boy, if he really believes this stuff, he has, you know, lost contact he's become detached from reality if he really believes this stuff.
Barr's comments came during his testimony to a committee investigating the attack on the U.S. Capitol. 9 people were killed in the riot and its aftermath. More than 800 people have been arrested in connection with the siege, while members of 2 extremist groups have been indicted on sedition charges over their roles in the attack. And for the latest on the committee hearing, we're joined live by CTV's Richard Madden in Washington. Richard, hearing it all firsthand, the recounts, the descriptions, how compelling was it?
Yeah, it was like reliving 2020 all over again. We covered that election, but to hear what happened in the Oval Office from some of the president's top officials was just really unbelievable, sometimes surreal. And it wasn't just Bill Barr describing that Donald Trump was detached from reality. You even heard from his campaign manager, Bill Stefian, who described that after the election, when Trump was pushing these conspiracies, there was Team Normal and Team Crazy. Hearing that from the president's campaign manager was jarring. You also heard Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, pushing back, trying to distance himself from the craziness and these conspiracies that the former president was spouting. But if you zoom out, the whole point of this committee hearing today was to prove that Trump knowingly pushed a false narrative, lies, and conspiracy, and he fundraised off it to whip up his crowd, send them to Washington, D.C. on January 6th, and then egg them on, and then for them to storm the Capitol on that deadly day. So a lot of compelling evidence, a lot of compelling witness testimony, even some from the former president's inner circle.
And could there be any indictments against the former U.S. president?
Yeah, I'm not sure. That's really up to Merrick Garland, the attorney general, who did say today he's watching these proceedings very carefully. It's unclear, and it's also, it would be unprecedented for a former president to face an indictment by the existing attorney general. I don't know if there's any illegalities. We'll have to wait and see what the committee comes up with. They say there's enough evidence, but I think there's you could see some illegalities stemming from just the general grift by the Trump campaign to really fundraise on this big lie that doesn't exist, and his supporters are sending him millions of dollars. And we're seeing more stories about the Trump family pocketing and profiting off money from supporters going to a bogus cause.
All right, CTV's Richard Madden in Washington. Thank you.
You bet.
Back here in Ontario, the NDP is preparing to search for a new leader following the resignation of Andrea Horvath. And the party's caucus is recommending MPP Peter Tavins be appointed as interim leader. Tavins has served as the MPP for Toronto Danforth since 2006. The party's provincial council will meet on Wednesday to either confirm Tavins or pick someone else. The party will then begin a leadership election to determine who will officially take over as the new leader for the first time in over a decade. No one has declared their candidacy as of now.
It's the first of its kind in public education in Canada. The Toronto District School Board opening a new Centre for Black Excellence today.
The centre is the TDSB's response to dismantle anti-black racism within the board. And our Andrea Case joins us now. Andrea, they're aiming to improve both experiences and outcomes for black students.
That's correct, Michelle. Now, whether it's math, science, dance, visual arts, or spoken word, mentors are shaping the next generation of black students. The new centre is in response to the black community who consistently advocated for deeper systemic change from the TDSB. There is a change in the air at Winston Churchill Collegiate Institute. It is a new home for the Center of Excellence for Black Student Achievement.
We are a hub, so what that means is that we don't actively have classrooms filled with students. What we do have is that we have different rooms that allow for different stakeholders based on our mandates to have experiences.
Last year, 600 people attended the program virtually, another 100 in person.
I believe that there is a severe lack of opportunities for black students. And it's only been very recently that there's been an increase in these things. And I think that something like this is almost monumental and marking the more programs for black students.
Elijah Adusi took part in a STEM program last summer.
Programs like this that are able to help black students meet with other black students, builds their confidence sort of, so they can go back to their school.
Lencia Walters is a grade 11 student who emigrated from Jamaica. She took part in an Intuit Challenge competition program.
Because this center actually makes me want to be myself, and everybody will accept it. No judgment, nothing. It's just genuine love.
The center is truly, handling so many different issues that black students are facing and have been disenfranchised for so long with immediacy and urgency. So to be here on this moment and to see this physically is a phenomenal experience, and I wouldn't change it.
Some of the programs are credit granting. Others, the students can take what they learned into the real world. A Black Student Summer Leadership Program is available for 100 students, plus there are co-op programs available. And as for Lencia, what she came up with was a toothbrush with a camera in it so it can send back information so that your dentist can figure out what's wrong with your teeth. Reporting live, I'm Andrea Case, smiling with my teeth. I'll send it back to you, Michelle.
I love it. Thank you, Andrea. Coming up, the urgent call for more blood donors, why donations are down, and the effort to get Canadians to roll up their sleeves.
I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, some people wear them to look good, but you should really wear sunglasses to protect your eyesight. Same harmful rays that can damage your skin can also damage your eyes. Researchers just tested various types available and have some good advice. I'll have that story. That's just ahead.
The heat really pours in as we head in towards the day tomorrow. And if you're sending the kids off to school, sunscreen and a hat, probably a good idea because not a cloud in the sky as we head throughout the afternoon. And the humidex value close to 28 as we get ready to pick them up around 3 o'clock. It only gets warmer as we head further and further into the week. Coming up, I'll have your full forecast. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Some of us wear them all year round, but many reach for their sunglasses once the sunny days of summer arrive.
And sunglasses don't just make a fashion statement. They protect our eyes from the sun's damaging rays. Here's Pat Foran and Consumer Alert.
You can pay $1,000 for sunglasses or a few bucks getting a pair at the dollar store. The main thing you want are sunglasses that are not only stylish and comfortable, but that will also protect your eyesight. When you're having fun in the sun, you may reach for sunglasses for some relief from the sun's blinding rays, but those rays aren't only uncomfortable, they can be dangerous.
Sun damage to the eyes accumulates slowly over time, and it could contribute to a higher risk of cataracts or macular degeneration.
Just as sunscreen shields your skin by blocking UV radiation, sunglasses can shield your eyes from harmful rays. But with so many choices, at prices ranging from a few dollars to several hundred or more, Consumer Reports says finding the right sunglasses is important.
Opt for sunglasses that fully block both UVA and UVB. You can look for a label that says they offer 100% UV protection or UV absorption up to 400 nm, which means the same thing.
If you wear regular glasses, you can also get non-tinted corrective lenses that have UV protection built in. Polarized lenses don't block UV rays on their own, but they can help you see better on bright days by reducing glare with light-blocking filters. Because of that, they're great for boating and fishing since they reduce glare on the water, and in the winter they work well when the sun shines brightly on the snow. And when it comes to style, the bigger the glasses, the better.
Larger lenses or wraparound style glasses will help keep the sun from reaching your eyes.
That helps protect the sensitive skin around your eyes, which is hard to cover with sunscreen. Pair those glasses with a hat, and you'll be made in the shade. And when it comes to cost, research shows the most effective sunglasses aren't necessarily the most expensive. There are many affordable pairs on the market that block 100% of UV rays. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
Well, this was definitely a day to grab those shades. Nice sunshine. We've got comfortable heat. It's feeling like summer already.
Yeah, don't forget the hat and the sunscreen,
yes,
Jessica.
It's a combination of everything, right? You want to get out and enjoy the beautiful weather, but you got to do it safely. Weather, well, it's brought to you by Trane, the most reliable heating and cooling brand. It's hard to stop a Trane. Now, we've seen the heat roll in. It really started late in the day Sunday, continued throughout the day today, and even now we're still holding on to humidex values kind of towards Windsor, close to 30, and it's going to continue to stay warm as we head through the day tomorrow, thanks to a ridge that's really going to build in and then stay put as we head through the majority of the week. Heading in towards Thursday, the humidex value could reach close to 40 for some. So we love the heat, but it can be dangerous when it gets that warm, so just take care and check on the more vulnerable people in your life when it comes to the weather. Tonight, dropping down to 15, the norm this time of year, 14, so not far off where we should be. The chance of a little bit of active weather, the bulk of that really staying in that extreme southwestern corner, so Windsor, kind of London area, Chatham-Kent getting the brunt of it. Getting into the day tomorrow, and that's where the showers are likely to stay, at least for the early morning hours, but through Toronto, Niagara, up towards Peterborough, everybody feeling the heat. It will feel close to 28 for us. Peterborough feeling like 32. That's with the humidex. So just enjoy the sun, but as we mentioned in Pat's story, you know, you got to just do it safely. Sunglasses, a great idea. Not only
fashion, but as function too, right? The bulk of the active weather we're watching is a little bit of a system making its way, tracking likely just towards that extreme southwestern corner. And it'll be a bit of a stationary front that's going to just kind of stay put as we kind of head through the overnight and into the day tomorrow. High pressure holds on firm, though, for at least the majority of southern Ontario, and that includes Toronto and the GTA. Timing everything out. Beautiful evening ahead of us. Again, the bulk of that rain is going to stay kind of right down there in towards Windsor, Chatham, Kent. Even the chance of a few isolated thunderstorms kind of popping up through the overnight. Getting into the day tomorrow, not a cloud in the sky. So just prepare accordingly if you work outside or you're going to spend some time outdoors. Getting in towards Tuesday, much the same. And then through our Wednesday, as we're watching for the chance of another round of active weather, the bulk of it staying up towards Huntsville, but we could see a few kind of spotty showers in the morning. We get a break into the afternoon, and then later in the day on Wednesday, we're watching for the chance of showers to return, and that's how we step into Thursday. So Tuesday, Wednesday, a whole lot of sunshine and the Humidex value just climbing higher and higher. Overnight, though, it gets really warm, well above where it should be. 20 degrees is that overnight low on Wednesday. Thursday, we're watching for the chance of rain and the risk of some thunderstorm activity. The Humidex value between 39 and 40. That's that feels like temperature. So just be careful with those outdoor plans. And jumping ahead, Father's Day, a little sunshine on the way for the father or father figure in your life. All right, stay with us. CTV News continues in just a couple of minutes.
On air, online, on every platform.
Escape tragedy by mere moments.
CTV News Toronto.
A story you'll only see here.
Winner of the Canadian Screen Award for Best Local Newscast.
We have developing details.
Watch weeknights at 6.
A significant drop in its donor base is prompting Canadian Blood Services to issue an urgent call for more donors in the coming months.
And CTV's Pauline Chan is hearing from one person with a personal connection to Canada's lifeline.
Throughout his childhood, sickle cell anemia caused many health problems for Charles Aforiata.
A significant pain throughout my body. I had bleeding from behind my eyes and my retina.
But getting blood transfusions changed all that.
I get my red cell exchange. It's every 6 weeks.
And he worried about the blood supply as COVID hit. Canada Blood Services is issuing an urgent call for more donors as its donor base dropped significantly.
Over 31,000, which would make the current donor base the smallest it's been in more than 10 years.
Dr. Graham Scher says many appointments were canceled due to COVID illness and exposure among staff and donors. Plus, they lost a major supply of donor recruitment when in-person events were halted. Now they're hoping to add 100,000 new donors by the end of this year. And having had COVID in the past is not a problem for donors.
There is no risk to the blood product, no risk to the patient who's going to get it, just because you've previously had COVID.
They're especially hoping to attract new donors from diverse backgrounds. For example, sickle cell anemia patients are more likely to find a better match from within the Black community.
If there are people in your world or in your circle that can be blood donors, please encourage them to be so.
His other message to Canadians? Thank you. Pauline Chan, CTV News.
British police have charged actor Kevin Spacey over historic allegations of sex offenses. Spacey charged with 4 counts of sexual assault against 3 men and a further charge of causing a person to engage in penetrative sexual activity without consent. The charges relate to incidents which allegedly occurred in 2005, 2008, and 2013. The 62-year-old is set to appear in court on Thursday.
Amber Heard is condemning the social media frenzy that surrounded the trial with her ex-husband, Johnny Depp. Heard has been trounced by Depp supporters who say she lied about him abusing her. She tells the Today Show she doesn't care what others say about her.
I don't care what one thinks about me or what judgments you want to make about what happened in the privacy of my own home and my marriage behind closed doors. I don't presume the average person should know those things, and so I don't take it personally. But even somebody who is sure I'm deserving of all this hate and vitriol, even if you think that I'm lying, you still couldn't look me in the eye and tell me that you think on social media there's been a fair representation. You cannot tell me that you think that this has been fair.
Heard also says she doesn't blame the jury who sided with Depp, saying he's a beloved character and fantastic actor.
The Rolling Stones canceled the concert in Amsterdam hours before it was set to begin after Mick Jagger tested positive for COVID-19. The band released a statement saying the 78-year-old tested positive after experiencing COVID symptoms after arriving at the stadium on the outskirts of Amsterdam. There were already fans inside when the cancellation was announced. The band says the show will be rescheduled and tickets for the canceled date will be honored.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Last Man's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
It's been a hard 4 years. This, you know, this door is now closed, but there's still, you know, the next 50 years of healing from this.
Updating our top stories, the man responsible for the Toronto van attack has been sentenced to life in prison. Alec Manassian was found guilty last year of 10 counts of first-degree murder, 16 counts of attempted murder in connection with the 2018 attack.
Members of the Ontario Provincial Police underwater search and recovery team who were involved in the search for missing 11-year-old Draven Graham located him deceased in the Scugog River.
An 11-year-old boy has been found dead after disappearing from his Lindsay home on Sunday. Draven Graham lived with autism and was found in a river following a massive search involving volunteers and police from several jurisdictions. Police say no foul play suspected in Graham's death.
It really does concern me, especially because everything is going up, not just mortgages.
Nobody wants to pay more for interest. Nobody will be happy about it.
Rising interest rates have homeowners concerned about being able to pay their mortgages. A recent survey found 1 in 4 people say they'll have to sell their homes if rates increase again. And remember to follow us on social media and keep up to date day and night through our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca. And if you ever have a news tip, photos or video of breaking news, let us know.
In business, Canadian and U.S. stock markets are in lower territory today as the markets focus on a range of concerns. With more, here's Kumutha Ramanathan from BNN Bloomberg.
The global stock market rout is deepening. In Canada, banking, energy, and tech shares were under pressure alongside all other sectors on the TSX. That's as investors turn to safe haven assets, pushing the U.S. dollar and fixed income assets higher. In the United States, the Wall Street benchmark S&P 500 was sharply lower in early trading, falling 22% below its January peak, closing into what the market is officially calling a bear market. The main reason for a sell-off: a potential 0.75% hike by the U.S. Federal Reserve at future meetings to combat hot inflation. That's leading investors to fear the American economy will sink into a recession. Those fears also abound in Canada as well as Europe. Meanwhile, Bitcoin plunged to an 18-month low amid the broader market sell-off. And news of the Celsius crypto lending platform freezing assets also led to lower crypto stocks. Meanwhile, if interest rates were to rise further, close to 1 in 4 homeowners say they would be forced to sell their home. A Manulife Bank debt survey found that 18% of homeowners polled are already at a stage where they can't afford their homes, with more than 1 in 5 Canadians expecting rising interest rates to have a significant negative impact on their overall mortgage and financial situation. Finally, there was a big deal announced in Canada's oil and gas sector today. Cenovus Energy has agreed to buy BP's 50% stake in the Sunrise Oil Sands project in northern Alberta. The deal will be for as much as $1.2 billion and shift BP out of Canada's oil sands. Now let's take a quick look at the markets. One Canadian dollar will get you 77 cents U.S. Oil was also a touch higher, 26 cents higher at $120.93 a barrel. Western Canadian Select is down 40 cents to $101.22 a barrel. And the TSX fell alongside its American peers, down 532 points to 19,742.56. And that's the latest from the BNN Bloomberg Newsroom. I'm Kumutha Ramanathan.
You know their names, and now some prominent local residents have a street in their honor.
All the way from Newfoundland.
And that's Canadian skiing legend Steve Podborski. He learned how to ski on the hills of the Don Valley and came back to Toronto today to see a street in Don Mills named after him. He's among 7 people who've had streets renamed, including former Raptor Kyle Lowry. The streets are in the new Don Mills Crossing subdivision at Don Mills Road and Eglinton Avenue. Very nice.
To your forecast, there's lots of sun and heat in the forecast this week, but we do have the potential for some wet weather tonight into tomorrow.
Just watching a system kind of likely to skirt just southwest of us, but always a good idea to be prepared. Right now, holding on to just a little cloud cover, but we're keeping a close eye on that system making its way kind of towards Windsor, Chatham, Kent. Around the Golden Horseshoe, the humidex not too bad right now, but it only increases as we get into the day tomorrow. So if you're going to hit a patio or you want to spend some time outdoors, just make sure you do it safely. As we get in towards the afternoon, still holding on to a ton of heat and that humidex value right around 28 degrees. So sunscreen, the hat, you know the whole story. You got to do it to keep safe. As we head into the day tomorrow, we climb above seasonal. We stay there. Those overnight lows, again, really, really warm. Getting into Wednesday, it feels like 30 degrees. Getting into Thursday, as it does, as we build this heat and humidity and the chance for some thunderstorm activity and that humidex value close to 40. So the heat is on this week. Just make sure if you're going to spend some time outdoors that you do it safely. Michelle, Nathan?
Appreciate it. Thank you, Jess. And be sure to join Andrea Case later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
In the meantime, you can stay up to date by going to our website and watch breaking news all day long on CP24.
For Jessica Smith and all of us here at CTV News, have a great night.